something interesting is sure to happen. Well, I think you want to tell me who you are first. Mr. Rabbit? Then why did you ask the question?
Goodness, this is quite extraordinary.
Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?
But today is turning into the most curious adventure I have ever had.
Welcome to the Alice in Wonderland podcast. This is a place for you to open your mind and let your sense of wonder, imagination, and most importantly, your curiosity loose. I'm your host, Georgia Alice, and today I'm joined by Sean Callahan. Now, Sean is the author of an award-winning book called Putting Stories to Work and the founder of Anecdote, the world's largest business storytelling enterprise. Now, I'm not going to say anything else about Sean. Welcome, Sean.
Hi, Georgia. How are you?
I'm absolutely awesome, and I can't wait to go down the rabbit hole with you because I want to know more about this storytelling fiasco that you're into. So before I get into that, I ask most of my guests a very simple question because my podcast is all around the theme of Alice in Wonderland. So Alice is a young girl and she wanders around Wonderland and she meets so many amazing creatures, and I'm going to say creatures because there's not many people in Wonderland, I don't think, down that rabbit hole. So if I was Alice and I'm walking through Wonderland and I bump into you, Sean, and I start a conversation and I ask you what it is that you do, what do you do, what's your purpose here in Wonderland, how would you respond to that? How would you answer me as a seven-year-old girl?
As a seven-year-old girl, gee, wow, that's an interesting one. You know, when we started our business, I guess one of the things that my business partner and I really wanted to do, if you like, was we'd be working in these large organizations and we could sort of see the humanity being drained from these big companies. So maybe I would say to an Alice that we sort of bring humanity back into organizations. That's what we do. And we use stories and storytelling to do that. So that maybe that's where I would start with Alice.
Yeah.
Maybe the Cheshire Cat would have a much more enigmatic sort of answer.
Yeah. Or even the caterpillar would have something wise to say while he's smoking pipe, right?
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
So storytelling, how did this come? You just mentioned that, you know, you're going to large organisations. So what's your background? What's the Sean story? What's your story of how you got to be where you are today? Because I'm assuming you haven't been doing this forever.
No, and it's not sort of a type of job where, you sort of, as a kid, you sort of say, oh, I want to help people with storytelling. It doesn't tend to be on the curriculum too clearly. And in fact, I know when it's heading up to Christmas now, and I know at these Christmas functions, my brother or sister will be there. My sister's a principal of a high school. So when people ask her, they all nod and, yeah, gotcha. My brother's a wine salesman. Oh, yeah, understand that. Sean, storytelling, they quickly move on to the next, the next topic.
I can imagine them thinking, how do you make money? Yeah, I can imagine them saying, how do you make money telling stories? But anyway,
that's right. I think my parents to this day, are worried about me, will I survive? But the thing about it for me is it's a very serendipitous way in which I got involved in this. I was working at IBM. And I happened to fall in with a group which had a very grand name inside of IBM. It was called the Canevin Center for Organizational Complexity. Yeah, I know. A bit of a mouthful, but essentially this group, which was led by a brilliant gentleman called Dave Snowden, and Dave was very interested in how do you make progress when things are complex and messy and there's no right answer. And through that investigation and with this group, we came to the conclusion that it was about sensing the patterns that were happening in the organization and reinforcing the good ones and disrupting the bad ones. And of course, the next question is, how do you work out where these patterns were? And we came to the conclusion it was all about stories, what stories were told in organizations. So we did a lot of like corporate anthropology and ethnography, and we'd go into companies and we'd collect hundreds, sometimes thousands of stories, and then work with the organization, they would work out for themselves the patterns of behavior in those stories. And then we would go through a sort of an intervention design process where we would work out how to reinforce the good ones and how to disrupt the bad ones. And it was great fun. We got to do really interesting projects. Like we'd go to the, say for example, we did a project with the tax office in New Zealand looking at the cash economy and how organizations like mechanics and hairdressers, you know, dealt in cash and how that related to the tax office and how they had to change their way of thinking about that industry. And so, you know, we collected these stories and really got a good sense of not only how the mechanics felt about the tax office, but how the tax office felt and acted towards the mechanics. And it was just absolutely fascinating. So that's where I got started. And we did that for, I don't know, probably four or five years, you know, working with large organizations that were just, I guess they got to a point where this traditional methods didn't work anymore. And so they were willing to try something new. And so we were the something new. And then I jumped out and I started Anecdote in 2004. And that's when, you know, I was doing that type of work. But pretty quickly, our customers sort of said, hey, you guys know a lot about stories. Can you teach us to be better storytellers? And in fact, we said, no, we're not going to do that. That's way too dangerous and apt to manipulation. And, you know, we're very forthright about this. And but, you know, they wore us down, I think. And really what happened was we said, look, we'll only do it if we focus primarily, or in actually not primarily, but solely on creating or helping you tell real life stories. So we weren't going to create stories for anyone. And we wanted small stories too, just because we'd heard all these stories in organizations, and the ones that get told in a business are tiny little stories, right? And it was, for us, that was the more authentic story, rather than what a lot of people are doing in the storytelling world is they're taking it from the perspective of a screenwriter. You know, and they're learning the hero's journey and how to make beautiful stories and listening to Dan Brown on Masterclass and, you know, doing all that good stuff that they do in that world. And they're trying to apply that to organizations. And I'm saying that that doesn't work. So that's where we came out of.
Yeah, really interesting you say that, because I'm very much aware of Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, which is a really great framework for life and what we do in life. So what do you see as the differences between Joseph Campbell's work from mythology and us always being these storytellers and having these heroes' journey, to what's the difference between that and what you're helping people create with their stories?
So I think it's partly just the type of story that gets told when you go down the path of the hero's journey. You know, A, it has to have a hero. Right. Well, there's lots of stories in the world that don't have heroes. It's a very male-oriented view of the world, if you like, the hero's journey. There are a lot of other archetypes and prototypes of stories which are different. And the stories that you hear in organisations rarely look like that. So, for example, we did this project for a pharmaceutical company where we helping them improve their leadership behaviours. So we, you know, went out and collected a whole bunch of stories of good and bad leadership behaviour. We would then have all the stories on the wall, and they'd have to go through this process of working out which is the most significant story. And the story that ended up bubbling to the surface of the most significant, and this happened multiple times because we were doing all these cohorts, was this tiny little story about a woman. She goes to a manager's office, he's typing at the computer, and he notices her out of the corner of his eye. She's standing at the door, and he stops what he's doing. He turns around, he sits at the desk, he invites her to sit down, and then he just focuses on her like, this is the most important conversation he could have, right? And the woman at the end of that says, and you know what? I really value that. And quite frankly, not many managers around here do it. Mm. Well, that story gets voted every time as the most significant story, because they're saying, look, if we could only do more of that, that would have a big impact on our business. Well, about 6 months into the program, the HR director says, well, I'm kind of bored of our story, Sean. Can you go out and get some more stories? Off we go, collecting stories. And we hear story upon story of people saying, I don't know what it is, but I go to my manager's office and they just stop what they're doing. They come to the table, they sit down, they focus on me, total engage with me. We actually saw behavior change, right? And it came from this tiny, almost anemic little story. It certainly wasn't a hero's journey, right? There was no dragon to be slayed, and there was no, point of no return, and, a denouement at the end. No, it didn't have any of that, right? It just had this tiny little anecdote. And that's the reason why we called our company Anecdote, because we were more interested in those tiny stories.
The little tiny ones that make a big difference. So what's the process then? So I can just imagine, right? This is me imagining, I've got a corporate background. So I can imagine everyone sitting there with these sticky notes, and they're writing the little stories and putting them on walls or somewhere. And then you're just going through and just looking at them all and going, how did you end up with that story as the one that bubbled to the surface? How did that come about?
Well, it's a workshop process, right? So the way in which we ended up doing it is all the stories. So the way we collect the stories first is that we will collect them sort of like focus groups, and we actually record the stories, record the whole focus group. And then we pull out the stories, and they have to be stories. It can't be opinions or viewpoints. They have to be a recounting of an experience.
A real life experience that they've experienced. It's not like, wouldn't it be nice if this happened? It's
exactly.
This actually happened. Okay.
It has to be an actual anecdote. And then once we've done that, we have that transcription put up on the wall. So imagine all these A4 sheets of paper with around the wall with all these stories. And then the group goes around, and they more or less are just putting dots on there to sort of pull out. We would take the top five stories, say, from the group, and then we would break them into smaller groups, and they have to have a conversation out of those five stories. Which of those five stories are most significant, right? So it kind of bubbles through these various layers. And that ends up being the story that gets told over and over. And it beats out even what would be, you would imagine it'd be even more significant stories of, there was one story about, a person being killed on the manufacturing sort of factory, and how well the leaders responded to that and stopped the whole factory and did all the right things. But that didn't quite get to the top as the top story. So one of the reasons why it's so engaging for the folk is that it's their own stories, right? And so they know the authenticity, they feel it. And the other thing I love about this process is you get these insights that I don't think you get in other ways, right? Sort of real breakthroughs in how leaders either see themselves or how they see the world. We had an example where we had all the stories up on the wall, and the most senior person in the room this day was the head of sales. And he was reading, now we had them in pairs reading through the stories, and he's reading through the story and he's getting very aggravated with it. And he's hitting the story with the back of his hand. He's going, what? What? And he's really hitting. And of course, everyone's looking to sort of go, what's going on? And the story's about this young fellow who's like a new employee. He's been interviewed. And during the interview, the person who's a senior person is getting interrupted by all sorts of things. So the phone would ring and the senior person would just sort of say, just one moment, takes the phone call, goes on with the interview. Then someone walks past the door. He goes, just one moment, Bob. And he would get Bob to have a chat with him. And anyway, and so the sales guy's getting really annoyed by them, until the guy next to him says, Jim, you realise that's you, don't you? And he just stops. And then another guy goes, Yep, totally nailed you, Jim. That's you. And to his credit, he gathered everyone next to the story. He read it out. He was red-faced. He read it out and he said, I had no idea I did this. Had no idea. And this is totally inappropriate. And I commit to everyone here now that I'm going to do everything I can to change this behavior, because it's wrong.
And did he change it? Do you know if he
changed it? Not only that, he became the CEO of the company as well. Ah, so it was not that I can say that there's a causal effect between those two things.
Oh, we don't know, right?
But who knows, right? Who knows?
So there's something really interesting.
I love that. Yeah.
There's something really interesting that you touched on there, which is a really great example for just our listeners, because I work a lot in the space of the mind and how change happens. So we run every day on a program. So this manager that you're talking about, that's just how he's programmed to, you know, automatically, hey, Bill, come in here for a minute. Oh, the phone's ringing out. That's just his program. You can't see outside of it. And there are a number of ways we can change this internal program that we have running, this default system. And you just gave a beautiful example of one of the ways that happens, but it's very rare and it's very hard to create these. It's called an emotional impact. So this person has had an emotional impact and he's actually seen the truth of who he is, and that has caused him to make immediate change. And if we want to create new habits in our world and in our life, it can take anywhere between 18 to 254 days, right? But he's just done it like that. Because what you've done through this process is you've provided him with that emotional impact. And I think sometimes that's what a story that is a real story, not a made up story, yeah, which is something we might take from mythology, but a real story has that power within it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think there's something implicit within the narrative structure that gives you emotion, right? And it comes actually from the fact that a good story is specific, you know, it's about a moment. It's not a generalization. It's not a very broad thing. It's like, for that story, it was like one moment. It was him answering the phone. It was him, you know, sort of calling people into his office. And in fact, and this, what happens there for the listener is, and whoever's reading that story, is they visualize it. Mm. Right? You can actually see it in your mind's eye when you hear that story. And I think that's the part that actually creates the emotion, because the listener is reliving the experience as much as the person that happened to, in some ways. And they've shown this very nicely in some lovely studies. There was this one where they put people into MRI scanners, right? And they had essentially one person telling a story and the other person listening to it. And when they got into story mode, and this, the story they tell is just about a woman going to her prom night, right? And all the funny things that happen along the way. And what happens, which is very interesting, is that their brain patterns, essentially from the MRI scan, match up, right? But the most intriguing thing is that every now and then the listener's brain pattern gets ahead of the teller. And of course, what's happening there? They're predicting, right? They're going, oh, I reckon they're jumping ahead. They're getting excited. And they found that whenever someone jumped ahead, their comprehension actually jumps up. Right, because you're so engaged in that, you're actually imagining the future.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen when people are just giving their opinion or are providing a statement or, you know, sort of sort of point of view or anything like that. That doesn't actually happen. It only happens in the story.
It's really incredible too, and really incredible that study. We have this amazing potential or power within us, which is incredible, actually, our imagination. So you've got two people, one retelling a story, the other one now is becoming, their neurons are mirroring that person, and then the power of imagination is now creating something else. Storytelling, like, I'm loving this because I think storytelling has a really great place in, from what I'm hearing from you, is in change, like in change, organizational change, or in personal change as well.
I think so. And I know, on the sort of organizational change, my view is that if you want to change a culture, you need to change the stories that are being told. Right? And part of it is understanding what stories are actually being told now. So you've got to have some sort of discovery element to it. But then, you know, then you start to work out what interventions might actually shift or nudge the stories in a different direction. And I think they understand that my work originally in that field of complexity is actually a really good one, because it shows you can't do it by fiat. You can't do it by saying, we're going to do this big transformation program. How many times you hear this, you know, and it just snaps back into the old ways of working. It sounds like your work and my work are similar in some ways, in that you have to try to find these things that incrementally and almost experimentally, you've got to try things out, see what sticks, nurture those bits that do stick, you know, retry and modify other things. It's like a lot of things in life. It's culture is ongoing. It's not like you can just say, tick, yeah, done culture. You know, it's like a lot of things in our life. You know, fitness, you can't just say, tick, done it. Yeah. You have to maintain it. And on the personal side, I know there's a whole field, I'm not very familiar with it, but there's a whole field around narrative therapy. And in fact, it was really started, that movement happened in South Australia. So Australia is at the centre of, you know, some of these really interesting works that have happened.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, just on that, so when we look at the organisation, there's this macro view of like a bigger picture of a whole heap of people with all their little individual stories that make up the culture. That's what it is. It's groupthink, group story. So what are we all saying amongst each other? And then we have an individual who, if you're wanting to change your own culture, your own mindset, your own belief systems, it's the same process. You've got to unpack, because this is what I teach with individuals and in organizations. We need to unpack the stories we're telling ourselves, which we also know as our belief systems or whatever it might be. It's the internal dialogue. It's the story we tell ourselves constantly. And yes. If we change the story, we change the results.
Yes, indeed. And in some ways, you can always do it back the other direction. You know, by taking new action, you actually get to change the stories that then start to change the way you see yourself. In our work, we talk about not only storytelling, but what we call story listening and story triggering. So, and the story triggering I find very interesting in that, you know, how do you go about doing, if you're a leader, how do you do something that's so remarkable that people will tell stories, new stories about that? And that only happens when you're going against the script or the program that you talked about before. You know, if you just do something that's in line with the program, no one will even notice it, right? But if you go and do something outside the program, outside the script, well, people will tell stories about it because they all of a sudden they're sensing something new is happening, right? So if you have an organization where the leader never turns up to your part of the business, never walks through your area, and then one day they do walk through your area, well, man, you're going to be telling stories about that. You know, and it can be good stories or bad stories if the leader's aware of what they're doing, right? So
yeah. I love that around leadership, because a lot of people don't know how to create an impact as a leader, and it comes down to, well, you create an impact by the stories people are talking about you, the stories people are saying and telling about you. So. Yes. You need to find out those stories, and if they're working for you and they're good, well, hey, you know, keep at it.
Do more.
You might need to re-script your stories. So, and you can't just re-script it by just saying and having an opinion, as you're saying. It's about, okay, what's the new story I want to live out? So the gentleman that you mentioned before, now he's going, oh, I'm no longer going to be rude and allow myself to be interrupted. I'm going to be undivided. That's his new story. He's written a new story for himself.
That's it.
Manager. Yeah. Oh, they're exactly. So powerful, these stories, aren't they? So you spoke
there
about...
And one of the principles that are very important here is that you can't actually beat a story with fact. You can only beat a story with a better story. Mm-hmm. And so if there's a story floating around your organisation... So I remember going to a big investment bank and, you know, I was working with the HR director, and I just said to him, so is there any story causing you pain at the moment? And he just sort of groaned and he went, oh God, yeah, I do. The story that was going around the organization, they just had a new CEO join them and a new strategy had come out. And the employees were saying, oh, well, the CEO just went home one night, picked up the strategy from the previous organization, changed the names, and voila, that's our new strategy. And the HR director's saying, no, we didn't. We went through we did stuff to, but clearly it wasn't visible to the business. And so they made up their own story. And I said to him, well, you can't just go out there and say, oh no, you're wrong. You actually have to tell a better story, or you have to do something that will generate a better story. And which they did. They sort of, you know, got everyone together and, you know, took them through what they did and some of the trials and tribulations. It has to be an authentic, plausible story, right? That not one that's made up, but it has to actually have happened.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes these things powerful in many ways.
And I think we're all got a built-in BS radar within all of us. And I think if we're in an organization, we're a leader and we're wanting to tell a story because we know it's going to get an impact, people's BS readers they're going to know. So I love what you say, that it has to be genuine, authentic. It has to be a real story and sharing the trials and the tribulations. Now, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned about, I think you said like these, that first of all, there was triggering. Is there some sort of process or some sort of framework, even though it's not the hero's journey, so to speak, but do you find that there's some sort of certain framework for this storytelling venture that you do?
Well, it sort of depends on where you want to sort of go in on it, for example. At the highest level, you know, if I'm thinking about change, and we get involved in change programs quite often, you know, we think about the overarching change story that, you know, helps people understand why that change is happening. And, you know, we use a very simple story pattern for that. And we'll just sort of say, look, in the past it was like this and then something happened. So that's why we're doing this, so the future can be like that. We call that a clarity story. But then part of it is about building the skills of your leaders. And, you know, we also work with salespeople as well, because that's a very important skill for them to have. But, you know, in a leader, in an organisational setting, it's really the leaders at different levels. And we're not talking just about the senior leaders. This is leaders from the front line, you know, team leaders all the way through to executives. And just giving them that skill of, and when I say giving them, that's not quite the right way of thinking about it. They have to develop the habit of storytelling. For this to work, it has to become just something that naturally happens when they're trying to make a point, that they can think of an example. That's all they have to do, is share an example that illustrates your point.
Yeah, and that's, I think, becomes a skill that you can master over time, because that was something that I knew I lacked personally in what I did, because I would always just talk to facts, right? And then they're bloody boring. Facts are boring, but the story, if you intertwine a story, not a metaphor, but a real story,
yeah,
people actually, they can relate to that. Like, metaphors I think can work, but I think a real story, the skill of being able to have a story to relate to what it is that you're wanting to get across.
And that's right.
And so how would somebody build up a repertoire of stories? Because, you know, there's so many things that happen in the world that we might want to have a story attached to, but we might not have personally experienced it. So how do we get a repertoire of stories?
Well, I think the first port of call is starting to notice the things that happen to yourself, right? And these can be really small things. So to give you an example, my daughter is in her 20s now. I have two daughters in their 20s. And she's a mad keen choir singer. So she has a choir. She's sung all her life. She just loves it. And one night we were invited to see the choir sing. But this night, instead of having the whole choir, they split it up so individual people were singing songs. And so my daughter had a spot. It was kind of like almost like a cabaret sort of nicely darkened set, and a little candle in the middle of the tables and things. My daughter got up to sing a song, an Adele classic, right? And I thought to myself, oh, gee, that's a big call. And anyway, she's halfway through the song, and just as she's moving from the chorus to the verse, her microphone stops working. And you could see her just going like this, and her face like freezing up, going, like, what's going on? And within moments, the MC runs across the stage and just gets the microphone and just switches it like this. And she hits the chorus, beautifully transition. Everyone, you know, applauds. She gets to the end of the song, standing ovation, right? And, you know, I was a very proud father and I'm thinking, this is great. I said, I'm thinking, she's good, but she's not that good. But the thing about it is that at that moment, I wasn't thinking at all about storytelling or anything like that. I'm just in the moment enjoying the experience. But the next day I was just thinking about that thing that happened. And I thought to myself, you know, if she'd sung it beautifully all the way through, she wouldn't have got a standing ovation, right? It's only when you fail and recover that you actually get that real accolade. So for customers, I'm thinking now customer service, I'm going, guys, when there is a failure, that's a great opportunity to get a standing ovation, right? So you tell that story and you make your point, they don't forget the point, right? Because they have this image, you know, they get to know the leader a little bit because they go, oh, he's got kids. They like to sing in the choir. He goes along to the choir. You know, like there's all this other stuff that's learnt about the person, about their character, their interests, because they share a story, right? So that's step one, is just to notice your own stories, the things that are happening to you.
Yeah, and that's really good because there's so much going on, I guess, in our world, and if we're smart enough, we'll see the message in the story and we can then make a connection between my daughter singing and having to have the mic swapped over with customer service or over with courage or whatever it might be the message you're getting across. So, yeah, that's a really powerful tip because I know personally I've got better as I've started to pay attention to the world around me and noticing the stories that are happening every day.
Yes. And some of the most powerful stories that you can tell have happened to you because no one's going to deny them. They're your story, right? This happened to you. But the majority of the stories you tell in an organisational setting are not your stories. They'll be someone else's stories. So you have to learn how to do that as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might find them in a business book. You might find them. I mean, that's the whole basis of our podcast, anecdotally speaking, is providing a story that business people can tell to build their repertoire, right? Here's the thing. I think the really important thing in any of this storytelling is you have to have a point, right? So if I told that story about my daughter, Alex, without a point in a business setting, they'd be looking at me like I'm crazy. Right? They go, what in the hell are you doing, you know? But as soon as you just say something like, I think it's important to preface your story with the point, right? Especially in a corporate setting. So you just sort of say something like, you know what, sometimes a failure can be the biggest godsend you can imagine. So I was, my daughter, and then straight into the story, right? And they listen to that story in a totally different way because they're going, okay, there's a point here. Oh, he's sort of giving us a point. What's the full point? And then you'd land the story and then you reiterate your point or show the bigger point or link to the purpose of the organisation or, you know, the organisation might be all about customer service, right? So now you've got this beautiful link up to that bigger point or that bigger value because they won't allow you to tell that story otherwise.
And here's something that's really, I think you've touched on this a number of times, is our ability as somebody listening to a story. You sort of touched on this before when you had, you know, the study, the experiment is if you're telling that story of your daughter, automatically I'm becoming part of that story. So I'm now becoming, I have a connection to it now. Yes. And now my brain is associating with it. My brain's now creating a neural network and a memory of that story more than the actual point you've made. But the point is going to get across. And it's, I think it's a really powerful thing that we forget that story is, I think story is the way that we've been taught for generation and generation and generation. And a lot of the indigenous tribes tell stories. Some of them are mythology, you know, not really true stories, but they pass down story. Okay.
That's right. No, definitely that's the case. I mean, it's the oral tradition. And, you know, I say that all humans tell stories. You know, if you're human, it's one of the first things that we've done as a species. And they believe, you know, if you go back far enough, they believe that the real watershed moment was the point where, and it was sort of the point where two people had to get something done together. So the point of collaboration, and they reckon this is the big change in our species, because as soon as you have to get something done together, say, for example, there's a bunch of bananas over there, too high for just one person to get the branch down, but with two people, You can get them down. But as soon as you have that scenario, I've got to communicate to the other guy, right? So I go, you go over there. And this is even before speaking. This is how old storytelling. It's before speech. That's crazy, right? So I'm pointing. There, you pull down. You do the little mime. That's why we're all good at miming, right? It's so core to us. But we're telling a story. That's how old this is.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting when you sort of think about that.
Yeah. So we've spoken a lot about organisations, and I think this is really powerful because the listeners that we have are across a great big gamut, and a lot of them are actually working in organisations. But what about the people like I get it, but what about the people that are an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, somebody that's a small business owner, and this is they're listening to this podcast, and how can they use story in what they do in their business? What would be the benefit of them creating a repertoire or noticing the stories in their life?
Well, for a small business or an entrepreneur, a lot of it what they're doing is they're selling ideas, they're selling the things that they're creating, and the research is pretty clear that sales come through an emotional connection. And it comes through you describing the functions and features of your product. That has to happen at some point. But really, for people to understand and really get excited, it comes from, the emotion that you connect. So in a sales process, you sort of have to do a few things. The first thing is you've got to connect with the person. And one of the best ways to connect with the person is tell a story that gives an insight into your character, right? It turns out that we're most influenced by people who are just like us, right? It's that whole in tribe, out tribe sort of stuff. And so if you can share a story that illustrates you're like the people you're, sort of talking with, all of a sudden you're making that connection quickly. It sort of builds fast rapport. Then you really have to show examples of, to build credibility, have you done this before? And so again, you tell some more stories. And then you want to share some stories about how your product has made an enormous difference to, other customers and the delight that that caused and created. That's more stories. And then you want to tell stories of when things went wrong, right? Because, this is buying something off someone else is an act of trust, right? What if this goes wrong? Well, I'd love to hear an example of where it did go wrong, but how they recovered and made a difference. So, it's just for any business, whether it's small or large, it's a series of small interactions between people, and people are engaged with stories. Mm-hmm. However, we've been taught the opposite, right? We've been taught to use, clever talk, using large words, which tend to be totally meaningless in many ways. And also they don't create any pictures for you, so it's really hard to remember them.
Mm. Yeah, I love what you said there. It's about creating that picture because our brains and our minds think in pictures. We don't actually think in words. So you're helping someone create a picture of the benefit of the organizational change, the benefit of the product you're about to sell, the benefit of doing something you've never done before. You create a picture of that and we're more likely to do it. We're thinking in these pictures, and you're right, a lot of people will confuse you and try and impress you with huge words and things that just don't have any narrative around them. You just don't create a picture. It's just like, oh, okay, yeah, you're intelligent, you know some words, but yeah, I ain't got a picture for that. So you lost me.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think it's not that people are, I think, overtly trying to be clever or show that they're smart or anything like that. They just learnt this pattern of behaviour, and it's the only thing they know. I was just chatting to my colleague this morning about how it's so easy for us to speak in non-story. Right, in the sense of I can just talk, I don't have to think about it, the words just roll off my tongue, I can say all these things and just go blah 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 blah, and I think I'm filling up a space that's useful. But you know what, the listener literally walks away having no idea. We had a colleague who was saying that his wife went to a big sort of state of the nation type talk by the organisation. The CEO came out and, you know, sort of gave a rah-rah session, and her partner, our colleague, asked her, so what was the session about? She could not recall really anything except the seats were really hard and she got a sore backside out of it.
Yeah, I can relate. I was at a function or an event a couple of weeks ago, actually, and they had a number of speakers, and one of them got up there and I'm going, what's her point? What's her story? She was telling us all about herself and her kids, and I'm thinking, yeah, but what's the point? I was trying to build rapport through some story that no one really cared about. So it was really interesting to see that. And I'm going, yeah, I'm just not connecting. So I got up and walked out. I thought,
why waste your time?
This is my life. I can go out and do something more. I can get out there and do some business while you're talking stuff that I'm not connecting to. So it's really important to really have those stories that make a point.
And I think this brings up a whole range of issues around where storytelling goes wrong. Right? And, you know, I think you make a nice example there of when you don't have a point. But there are other places where storytelling goes wrong. For example, I like to think of sometimes stories along a spectrum of intimacy, right? So you have very intimate stories and then stories that you can tell to 1,000 people. And I think sometimes people forget where they are and where their story is on that spectrum. And they start to tell a really intimate story to a group that's not really comfortable in hearing that intimate story. And it just puts them off. It doesn't actually make that. And all the good things you think would happen in stories, it does the opposite in that situation.
So would that come down to having a bit of an understanding of your audience?
Yeah. And what relationship you have to the audience, right? So if you were a super megastar, right, and you giving a big keynote, you might be able to get away with that, right? Because you're almost giving a little bit of extra permission to share more of your life and who you are. But if you're a leader, mid-level manager in a bank, for example, and you start telling a story of the abuse you suffered when you were a kid, that's just going to make everyone feel really
uncomfortable.
That's right, exactly. So you have to understand that not only the audience, but you know, what story you're telling and where does it sit on the spectrum? A friend of mine told me that, you know, there are front porch stories, lounge stories and kitchen stories and maybe even bedroom stories. And you got to know where you are, you know, in terms of that.
I love that analogy. One thing, I'm going to finish up. And one thing I want to just touch back on before, you said you have your own podcast, which has a collection of stories. So how does this work for our listeners if they're going, okay, I know I've got something I need to deliver, I don't have a story. So how does your podcast work and how can people get benefit from that?
Well, the podcast is just a series of, each episode is just one story that you could tell, and we tell you where it could be told and how it could be told. But the other thing my business partner, Mark Schenk, do in the podcast is we talk about why the story works, right? What is it about that story that makes it a good story? And not only that, where could it be even better? Like we take turns of telling these stories and sometimes we don't do a great job. And so we go, okay, what could we have done better to make that an even better story? So it's just a way for anyone to get immersed in lots of stories. And seeing every week they get a new one, so it's just a way to build up that repertoire. So it's funny too, at the end we rate these stories and sometimes, you know, I'll go, oh, this is a 9 and Mark says it's a 4. And I'm going, a 4? I mean, how can you give that a 4? And then someone will sort of give us a message from one of our listeners just saying, oh, no, it wasn't a 4. I used it the next week, and then they tell us how they've used it, you know. And it's just amazing, just the different stories having different uses depending on the context and the type of people you are, right? So it's good. I love it.
What a wonderful gift, though, to be giving people is the, you know, some people just aren't, like, I never used to be a great storyteller. So if I'd known about your podcast, I would have been on there listening for some content. So what's the name of your podcast?
It's called Anecdotally Speaking.
Okay, so for our listeners, if you're looking for a repertoire of amazing stories, or maybe not all amazing, but stories, and I guess that you're also helping them understand the art of storytelling, in yes. those podcasts, get along to Anecdotally Speaking. So as we finish up, is there any final words of advice or thoughts or anything you'd like to leave our listeners in relation to the art of storytelling? What's something you'd like to leave them with?
Well, I guess two little tips, I suppose, would be I'd like to leave you with. One is that some people, well, they learn about storytelling, they get all excited about it, and then they start using the word story everywhere, right? So they get up in front of a group of people and they say, I'd just like to start this session by sharing a bit of a story. Unfortunately, that has lots of negative connotations for the audience. Story means made up, means childlike, it means not business, et cetera, et cetera. You want to eradicate the story word from your vocabulary. You want to just go in and say, I had an interesting experience the other day, and then you share it, right? People love experiences. They love to hear what happened, but they don't want to hear the word story, especially in a business context. And, you know, lots of other contexts, we love it, but in a business context, it doesn't work. It's even worse if you said, you know, you have a great story to tell you or a funny story. Don't do that. You're just setting yourself up for disaster. And the other thing too is that, you know, this is a very practice-based skill, right? It's like going to the gym. You know how you might have joined a new gym. You go in and on that first day, they show you all the equipment and maybe do some measurements and things like that. If you stop there and then, you don't get fit, right? You actually have to go every week and you have to use the machines and do the exercise, and over a period of time, you build your capability. It's the same with storytelling. You have to take it upon yourself to actually sort of say, okay, this week I'm going to share a couple of stories, and it will feel clunky when you start. Luckily, however, no one really knows you're sharing a story if you don't use the S word, right? So you can give it a go in small, risk-free sort of environments, small groups. And then once you start getting more and more comfortable, you might think, oh, I'm going to put some in my presentation. Next thing you know, you can do a keynote presentation at a conference, right? Fill the stories. So there's a progression, I suppose, in building up your story skills.
Yeah. I love that you said that don't use the word story, because I never thought of that before. And that alone is like that's a gold tip, a platinum tip, actually. That's a great tip. So if people would like to get you involved in their organization, or is there a way that they can, besides the podcast, learn from you and the processes and the frameworks that you have, what's the best way they can contact you and get a hold of you?
Well, yeah, thanks. Just come to our website, anecdote.com. And we have lots of things we share with all the people who come along to the site. So lots of free things to look at and download and whatnot. And, you know, we run courses. So there's, you know, storytelling for leaders, storytelling for sales, storytelling for change. There's lots of different courses we run. And if you have an interest in that, we'd be more than happy to chat.
Wonderful. Now, just finally as well, you're based in Melbourne, but you're a global company, so you have representation around the world as well. So I know this podcast is listened to around the world. So if someone's going, hey, I'm not in Melbourne, Australia, they still have the ability to work with you.
That's right. We operate in 22 countries and in 11 different languages. So there's a lot of different places where you can learn about our programs. And, you know, when you go to our site, we can practically find just about anywhere that we can deliver programs. So, yeah, just let us know. We're out there to help.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. You've given me, I'm going to go back when I'm editing this, and I'm going to go back through and I'm going to be making some notes around some storytelling, and I'm going to get onto your podcast as well. So that's been really helpful. And as I said earlier, before we started recording, I said, I've got you on here for purely selfish reasons, because I want to master the art of storytelling, but we're not going to use the word story anymore.
That's it.
So good. Thank you so much, Sean, for your time.
Oh, it's been a
pleasure. Man, absolutely amazing having you on here. So once again, thank you. And no doubt we'll see you in a story somewhere.
Sounds good, Georgia. Thanks very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Sean. I know I did, because the work that I do does involve, you know, coming up with stories. And I used to think that metaphors were the great way to get a message across. But it sounds like, and it makes perfect sense, that stories are the way to connect with people. So I encourage you to have a look at Sean's website, anecdote.com, and subscribe to their podcast and get some ideas from some stories that are relative to you and your journey. Whether you're working one-on-one with people, whether you're a small business owner, whether you're in a corporation or a leader, I think you're going to get a lot of value from that. So thank you for joining me and coming down the rabbit hole with me. If you enjoyed this one, this podcast, please like us, give us a thumbs up or whatever platform you're listening to, leave a comment, whatever works for you. I'd love to hear some feedback from you as well. And make sure you subscribe to the Alice in Wonderland podcast. Stay curious, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Today is turning into the most curious adventure I've ever had.